The following presentation was recorded before a live audience during the 2013 Health and Wellness Seminar held in Bay Roberts, Newfoundland. Our presenter was Dr. Tim Riesenberger, and the title of this third presentation was Cancer, Is There a Cure? It is our hope that you will be informed, encouraged, and inspired as you listen to this presentation.
Cancer is a very serious topic, not just because of the mortality. Some people don't actually fear the death in terms of cancer, but what do they fear?
Suffering.
The suffering, that's right. Because what immediately comes to your mind when I say the word cancer?
Pain,
suffering, nausea. Why nausea? Yeah, because of chemo, right? What else? Wasting, right? You see these people, they just are gaunt, right? They lose a lot of weight, right? So a lot of people, when I talk to patients, it's a very loaded word. Like if I see an x-ray or I see something on their x-ray and I might say something like this, you know, Mr. Jones, we thought you initially had pneumonia, so we got the x-ray, but unfortunately I don't see a pneumonia, but I do see a large mass in the blah, 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 blah. Then they don't hear anything else I say, right? Or if I say we see an irregularity on the CAT scan or a growth, right? We try to avoid saying the word cancer as physicians, because we know that you like tune out at that point and you won't hear anything else because you're already moving 1,000 miles a minute wondering, well, am I going to die, right? A lot of people think of cancer as a death sentence, but it doesn't have to be a death sentence. It can be prevented. It can be cured. But I tell people, although I work in the emergency department, and I usually am associated with the acute phases of illness, I would rather be on the front lines of preventing illness. Wouldn't that be a lot better than just curing it afterwards, right? Have you ever heard the old story about the ambulance in the valley versus the guardrail on the road? It'd be better to have a guardrail to prevent people going off the road than to have the ambulance in the valley down at the bottom, right? So what are some of the signs and symptoms of cancer? This may be a little bit more difficult for you, but there are actually 7 signs / symptoms of cancer that the American Cancer Society, sorry, that's my understanding, that's where I read my literature, has put out for the lay public. Anyone know what those 7 are? Well, weight loss, yes, but weight loss can happen for a lot of reasons. That didn't make the top 7, but certainly it is a hallmark for many cancers. Fatigue, yeah, but that was very general too. That didn't make it either. Swelling, yes, a lump or swelling is one.
And that's more specifically about breast cancer, testicular cancers, things like that. And hopefully they promote self-examination, right? Actually feeling and looking and making sure there's not a lump or a bump that is new or is growing, things like that. Anything else? Hoarseness, yes, that actually did make it. A cough or hoarseness. A cough or hoarseness. You know, it's very intriguing. I talk to a lot of my patients, and they'll have this cough or something like that. And I said, what's going on? And they said, I don't know. I got this cough. And I say to them, what do you think it is? And they're like, well, I think it's probably just I caught a cold from, my daughter. You know, she was sick a while back and whatever. And I said, well, when was that? Oh, well, I've had it for 6 months. It's not a cold for 6 months, right? But sometimes people try to fool themselves and think that it's okay when it's not, right? So cough or hoarseness, not when you have a fever and when everyone else is coughing in the house, right? But a persistent cough or hoarseness. Anything else? You guys are doing great. Yes, absolutely. So bleeding or discharge, right? So sometimes rectal bleeding can be a hemorrhoid, but sometimes it can be colon cancer. Right. So, I mean, you don't want to ignore that. You know, I had someone joke around with me one time and she said, oh, you know, I haven't had my period in years. I went through menopause, but now I'm young again. I've got my period. It was uterine cancer. So you want to be careful
and not ignore, right? Ignore things like that. Like a change in bowel or bladder habits. You know, if you suddenly become constipated or if you suddenly get diarrhea, that may be an ominous sign of a mass in your intestines. So certainly those are things to keep in mind. Anything else? You guys are doing really well. Yes, absolutely. A change in a wart or mole, for sure. Change in a wart or mole. And what are we concerned about with the change in a mole? Melanoma, right? That's the concern. And why is melanoma so feared? Because it actually has a tendency to spread, right? It metastasizes. That's a big long word that we use so we can bill higher on our, you know, just kidding, we don't do that. But it's a large word that just means spread to another location. So that's why melanoma is bad. And obviously, I had someone look at I have a little mole here on my hand, and this is hyperpigmentation due to trauma. I actually had a biking accident. I got a piece of gravel in there, and then it created some irritation. So even though we got the gravel out, it created a little mole. And I had a colleague of mine, he's a surgeon, he's like, you better take care of that melanoma really soon. So do you think it's melanoma? We're going to talk about it a little bit more later. You'll be able to be junior dermatologist by the end of the lecture. Any other signs or symptoms you can think of? You can. Frequent urination can be due to infection as well, but you can have blood in the urine. One time I had a guy who was convinced that he had a kidney stone, and you know, he had come in for bloody urine. And it was very interesting because his urine had no white cells and no bacteria. There was no infection. And I said, well, do you have any back pain? He's like, well, maybe, but not really. So he just came in for hematuria, just for bloody urine. And I thought, you know, I don't really have a diagnosis. It's not an infection, probably not a kidney stone. So I got a CT, and I'm glad I got the CT because he had a renal cell carcinoma. He had a kidney tumor. Young guy. He was in his 30s, and they were actually able to take care of it, and he was fine. It hadn't spread, thank God, outside of that one kidney. So we caught it just from that sort of symptom alone. So, yeah, you can have bleeding, but that's kind of up here already. Any other signs, symptoms? Well, yeah, absolutely. That does happen with a lot of cancer. That didn't make the top seven, but yes, there's lots of like leukemia, stuff like that. Jaundice can be other things. Those didn't really make it because we wouldn't recommend those to the lay person because you wouldn't know what your white cell count was. And many times people mistake jaundice for just someone who's yellow, right? Sometimes people just have a yellow pigment to their melanin, their skin tone. We have painful or trouble swallowing. That's what those large words basically mean. We went to the cough for hoarseness, lump thickening, a change in bowel or bladder habits. We talked about that. And the last one we talked about was a sore that doesn't heal. A sore that doesn't heal can either be a skin cancer or it can indicate that your immune system is not functioning properly because it's not healing. You talked about the change in a wart or a mole. This is actually a very quick sort of dermatology sort of lesson because a lot of people don't know how to look at things on their skin, and you really should go to your dermatologist and look at it yourself. ABCD is what we use for lesions or masses or moles, and A is asymmetry, which means you are designed to look the same on one side as the other, right? So if you're asymmetrical, you mean it looks different on one side or the other, that's not a good sign. That's a more malignant feature. B is border, should be a smooth border. An irregular border can be a sign of cancer. C, color. The things on our body should be really just one color. If it's multiple colors, that's a sign of potential cancer. And D, it should be no larger than the head of an eraser or 6 millimeters. And I'll give you some examples. We already talked about the worst skin cancer, which is melanoma because it spreads. Anyone know what the most common cancer is of all the cancers? It's actually skin, but a lot of people don't know that because it doesn't kill you generally. It doesn't kill you. But the most common cancer is skin cancer. And thankfully, when we see a lot of these skin cancers, they can just be removed or frozen off or cut out or things like that. They generally don't change location except for the melanoma. The other forms, the squamous cell, the basal cell, those generally don't metastasize. They just locally spread. So normally you can just take care of it there in the office. So this is normal symmetry. You see how it's the same on one side as the other? That's benign. That's normal. Do you see how this is not normal? See how this is kind of a flat side and this is kind of the, you know, kind of raised side? That's melanoma. That's skin cancer. This is a normal border. You see how it's a smooth border? That's actually a strawberry hemangioma. That's a benign sort of lesion. Just don't cut into it because it'll bleed. This is an irregular border, right? Raspberries are good to eat, but not on you. So that's actually a melanoma. This is a normal color. See how it's just kind of a tan, right? That's a wart or verruca. This is too many colors, like black, you got a little red, brown hanging out here. That's melanoma. That's cancer. Normal diameter, less than 6 millimeters. I don't know if you can appreciate that. This is the patient's mouth here. That's large, right? That's actually melanoma. That's cancer. So there's lots of ways we detect cancer. Sometimes we pick it up on labs. Someone mentioned a high white blood cell count. Normally, high white blood cell counts make you think of infection, but sometimes they can make you think of cancer. Sometimes a low white blood cell count can make you think of cancer. Sometimes an abnormal feature or look to the white blood cell under the slide can make you think of cancer. There are lots of labs that we check. Your liver sort of function test can tip us off to cancer. But generally, we don't use many labs. Like one time we saw a urine test, and I told you that you know, just the blood tipped us off. But there was one time we had a tech who, on someone's urine test, we were getting it for infection. They said there's bladder cancer cells in there. And the tech was just had saved the person's life. So sometimes just on a urine test. There was one time a nurse actually came up to me, and she said, oh, I accidentally got this pregnancy test on a guy, and it's positive. Ha, ha, ha. But I wasn't laughing because he had a germ cell carcinoma. And the germ cell carcinoma was producing the beta HCG, which is the hormone that babies typically produce in your blood, and it was causing the flag for the positive pregnancy test. But he was not pregnant. He had, like, a tumor. Thankfully, he did okay. Normally, with cancers, we're talking about imaging, X-ray, CT, MRI, PET scans, things like that to detect. But the problem with a lot of the imaging is by the time they detect the cancer, it's huge. Right? It's huge. I mean, even a lump that's just a few millimeters that appears is millions, billions of cells large already. So it's very, very hard to catch the cancer early. And that's really what we'd like to do, is we like to prevent it actually before it starts. In fact, is it possible to catch cancer at one cell? What do you think? Did you know there's a modality now that can detect it at one cell? There is not only a system that can detect it at one cell, but can destroy it at one cell. Any thoughts to what that might be? That's correct. It's actually the system that the good Lord gave you, the immune system. Did you know you're forming cancer cells right now? In your bodies? There's cancer cells being formed right now in your body, but they are being detected and eradicated by the immune system. Have you ever heard of natural killer cells? The natural killer cells are really designed to pick up and to catch them before they become larger. Anyone know what the number one cause of death here in Newfoundland is? That's right, it's not cancer. That's kind of a trick, but it's heart disease. It is heart disease. Because if you look at your stats, I don't know if you remember the global burden of disease. I pulled that from The Lancet for you guys. And that was actually just put out at the beginning of 2013. Anyone remember this slide that I showed you yesterday? If you look at it, what are your top killers as far as cancer? lung, and then colorectal, and then breast. So that's what we're going to talk about for you. We're going to talk about those three. The reason why I think that there's a shift from heart disease to cancer as the number one killer is I believe a lot of it's education. I remember one of you told me yesterday on the way out, I learned more from your hour lecture than the last 10 years with my physicians. This is where we should spend healthcare dollars. And we agree, right? Absolutely. The reason why I think that a lot of the incidence of heart disease is going down is because we've educated the public so well. Like cholesterol. How many people know what cholesterol is? Everybody. LDL or HDL? Everybody. Saturated fat. Who knows what saturated fat is? Well, most people. Anyone name the four risk factors to heart disease? Do you remember that from the first presentation? Blood pressure, high blood pressure, diabetes, smoking. Yes, high cholesterol, lack of exercise, and obesity. Yeah, you've named them all. The big four are smoking, diabetes, high cholesterol, and high blood pressure. Those are the four big ones. The next one that's coming is lack of exercise, and the one after that is obesity, right? Anyone remember the problem with margarine? Why? What's created when you make margarine by way of hydrogenation and stuff like that? What's created that's really not good for you? The trans fats, that's right. And that's like a huge accelerator, not only of atherosclerosis and heart disease, but also cancer. Anyone remember how to get to the front of the line in the ER? Yeah, chest pain. And so we've not only educated the public, but we've educated the professionals. So your top cancer is lung. After that, it's colon. Then after that, it's breast. So this one is not rocket science. What do you suppose causes a 7 times increased risk in lung cancer? Oh, of course, right? I mean, do you really need the black box anymore on the cigarettes to say smoking may be harmful to your health? I mean, please, right? Who would, at this point, everybody knows that smoking is bad for you. I hope, right, we've established that. However, the thing that's new is that there was a very interesting epidemiological study that they did, and they were finding that bartenders and waitresses were coming down with lung cancer, with heart disease, with COPD and emphysema. And they started to wonder what it was about these occupations that caused this increase in disease. By the way, they didn't smoke. What do you suppose was happening? Secondhand smoke, that's right. Did you know that for every 7 people who gets lung cancer because of smoking actively, 1 out of those 7 gets it passively? So if you have about 350 deaths in my country, 350,000 deaths from lung cancer, 50,000 deaths are from secondhand smoke. So it's dangerous to others. And so because of this, they passed a law, and I believe it's also active in your country too, that in my country you're no longer allowed to smoke in public places, because they're trying to protect the workers and those who don't smoke in those establishments as well. We talked about the number of deaths, and if you think about it, 3 million people die per year from cigarettes. That's a lot of people. That's a lot of Twin Towers. That's a lot of 9/11s. But it doesn't get the TV coverage, right? Because it's not as glamorous to see someone smoking out of the hole in their trachea, right? That does happen. It's scary. It's sad. But I think it deserves more media attention, because those people's lives are just as important as the lives that were lost in 9/11. Well, yes, divorce is not good for your health either. And any other cancers besides lung cancer caused by cigarettes? Well, you can look at the slide there. What cancer isn't caused by cigarettes? Lip, mouth, throat, larynx, trachea, lung, esophagus, stomach, liver, pancreas, and leukemia. And more caused by cigarettes. A lot of people say, well, it doesn't matter what you do as long as it doesn't hurt others. Have you heard that? Like, do whatever you want as long as it doesn't hurt others. Well, how true is that really? Right? Think about pediatrics. Do you know what the number one cause of asthma in children is? Wow, kids are starting to smoke? Is that what you're saying? Yes, actually, it is the secondhand smoke. They've actually done studies where if you're in a closed room with a smoking adult and a little baby there in the crib, that for every pack of cigarettes that adult smokes, this is how many cigarettes in a pack? 20, right? 20. For every 20 that adult smokes, it's as if the child smoked 9 of them. Did you know that? And people say, well, wow, that's a lot. That's like half the pack. But you have to understand the baby is a smaller human being, right? So it's more affected by the smoke, even though it's in a lower concentration. So it's very true that you could actually be smoking and your baby could be smoking half a pack a day. Against their will. I talked to a guy and I asked him, so how long have you been smoking for? And he said, I've been smoking for 60 years. And I said, didn't you just tell me you're 66? He's like, yeah, I started when I was 6. And I'm like, wow, how's that possible? He's like, well, my parents gave me a cigarette at 6. I remember. I'm like, wow. And how easy do you think it was for him to quit smoking? Oh, it's impossible. The earlier you start, and that's why I'm actually glad to see some young people coming, you know, to this presentation, because when you start your habits earlier, they will tend to stick with you the rest of your life. It is much harder to change when you're older, but is it possible? Yes, you can teach an old dog new tricks. Absolutely. So it is possible to change and to enjoy the benefits of those changes. I had one patient one time tell me that it wasn't their smoking, but it was the barbecue that they had that weekend that caused their child to have asthma. What do you think about that? It may not have been good, right? But it certainly wasn't the number one cause. And why I say that is that this parent wanted me to give them albuterol and prednisone and a nebulizer machine and all this stuff. Do you think that albuterol cures asthma? Has anyone ever said, well, they raise my dose of albuterol and I don't have asthma anymore? Has that ever happened? What happens when they stop taking the albuterol? It comes back, right? So what you want to do is focus on the cause, right? And the number one cause of pediatric asthma is cigarettes, secondhand smoke. So you get rid of that. And a lot of people say, whoa, whoa, wait, doctor, I smoke, what? Outside, right? And then some people are even ready for that. Because I say, well, it comes in on your clothes. But then they say, oh, no, I changed my clothes. Right? They're ready for me. But then I've got the ace up my sleeve. And I say, well, that's great. What I'd like you to do is I'd like you to take a white bleached linen sheet, wrap yourself in it, and go to a sauna and drink 2 or 3 liters of water over the next half hour. Just kind of sweat it out. Then look at the sheet. What do you suppose they will find on the sheet? Why? Why would the nicotine appear on the sheet? Because it comes out to your pores. Your very skin exudes it. And it comes in contact, of course, with your children. So it's very much better, instead of managing symptoms, to just nip the cause. You know, take care of the cause. You know what the most popular method for quitting smoking is? Most popular. I didn't say most effective, but I just said most popular. Anyone know? Nope. Cold turkey. Absolutely. The most people who quit actually do it by cold turkey. Now, that doesn't say that it's the highest percentage success. I'm just telling you how most people do it. Most people quit via cold turkey, meaning they just stop. So it is possible to quit. It's hard. But it's possible. You know, Mark Twain, he said, I've quit smoking thousands of times. Right? But then he started up again, right? So we don't want that. Now, does anyone know the most successful method? Meaning the highest percentage of people who quit this way stay quit after 1 year and then after 5 years. Substitution? Oh, I like that. Maybe that's an interesting study we could do. Actually, it's not. The most successful method, and this is actually from the ER doc literature, if you have in the process an acute heart attack, and I come over to your bed and you're having the heart attack and I tell you to quit smoking, that's actually the most successful method. No, you laugh, but it's true. It's true. You know why? People in crisis make changes, right? You have to strike while the iron is hot, so to speak, right? How much need do you think the person is feeling when they're actively having the heart attack? They feel some serious need for change because they're afraid of imminent death, right? And if you tell them, listen, this is due to your smoking, let me tell you, they get rid of it. And it's although fear is not the best motive, it is quite effective sometimes. So as far as actual methods studied, that's the most effective method. But you mentioned the patch, and there's other things that are helpful, Zyban or Wellbutrin. I don't know if you've heard of those medications. You can use those to quit. There's the electric cigarettes. Have you seen those? There's lots of ways to quit. Whatever method you use, just quit. There's no better way to help your health than to quit smoking or help someone else. However, what's the most common reason people relapse? What are the stories you've heard? Stressed. I got stressed out and I was around cigarettes, right? Right. Or it's like, oh, I sat down in my easy chair and there was something, there was an ashtray, right? Or I got up in the morning, I drank my cup of coffee and then I wanted a cigarette. Or I was at the bar and I was having a drink, and right, so there's lots of associations. So you want to get rid of all those associations, right? And this works not just for cigarettes, this works for any bad habit. Just think of all the situations where you fell into the bad habit and eliminate all those situations. Now, that may mean that you have to change your furniture, it may mean you have to change your locations, it may mean you have to change your friends just for a little while, right? Till you can get over the hump. And the concept is actually found in Romans. Romans 13:14 says, put ye on the Lord Jesus Christ, right? We need more than human power. We need a higher power. And then it says, make no provision for the flesh to fulfill the lust thereof. So what does it mean to make provision or no provision? When you quit smoking, do you put a little pack in the upper drawer? Just in case, right? That's making provision, right? So you want to eliminate all possibilities to get back at the cigarettes. Don't make provision to fall into whatever bad habit that is, right? So when you quit, get rid of all access to cigarettes. And it may mean clearing out your house. It may mean getting rid of the lighters. It may mean getting rid of the matches, right? Everything that's accessory to whatever that habit is, get rid of it, change the furniture, steam clean, get rid of whatever you need to avoid provision, then take care of that. Anyone know who Dr. Burkitt was? Anyone ever heard of Burkitt's lymphoma? Ever heard of that? No? Well, Dr. Burkitt studied more than just lymphoma. He studied various forms of cancer, and he found that certain tribes in Africa got no form of this type of cancer compared to the Western world like England and things like that. And he finally isolated one component in the diet that was the risk factor or the benefit. Whether or not you ate it gave you protection against this cancer. Anyone knows what it might be? It was, yes, that's right. It was fiber. Who said that? Very good. Yeah. So, and fiber isn't even absorbed. Did you know that? Isn't that funny? That something that you eat that's not even absorbed could be beneficial for you. Now, we talked about the two types of fibers, right? We talked about the soluble fiber. We talked about the insoluble fiber. What is the soluble fiber good for? Anyone remember? What does it do for you? Yes, that's right. It lowers your cholesterol. Very good. So soluble fiber is the most reliable way to remove cholesterol from your body. And the insoluble fiber, does anyone know what the insoluble fiber is good for? That's right. Keep things moving. And that's very important because what they have found is that certain things are very carcinogenic or cancer-causing. Certain proteins, especially in meat, especially smoked sort of meats, barbecued sort of meats, are very highly cancer-causing. And what they found is when they stick to the bowel wall for long periods of time, they induce mutation in the bowel wall. They cause the cancer formation. However, if you have a faster transit time, meaning how quickly the food moves through, it is less carcinogenic. Also, they found that the bile salts themselves, if left in contact with the colon wall for a long period of time, they cause cancer as well. So the fiber can help to not only bind and absorb that, but to keep things moving along. We talk about transit time for human beings, and it's very funny because the medical literature, I'm going to be very honest with you, the medical literature considers that a bowel movement every other day is within normal limits. It is. It does say within normal limits. But you know what my question is as a scientist? If you're only going once every other day, where are the other five meals going? Right? I mean, where are they going? That's my question. But technically, the medical literature says that. I personally, my own personal opinion, is you should be going way more than that because it shouldn't all be just kind of hanging out there in your intestines. The average person has up to 5 to 22 pounds of stool in their colon at any given time. That's a problem. I wouldn't want that much kind of hanging out there. So the fiber helps to actually decrease the transit time, keep things moving along. And you know how you know what your transit time is? You know how you can do it yourself? It's like a little home experiment. Yeah, you can eat corn or beets. Have you ever tried that? And the way you know the transit time is you time from when you eat it from when you see it again. So that's going to tell you what the transit time is. And obviously, you don't want a transit time of like 5 days, right? That can be a problem. If you have a transit time of under 12 hours, that could also be a problem too. That could be indicating some sort of illness or sensitivity or food sensitivity or food allergy that you maybe have that's causing diarrhea, right? So insoluble fiber is very good for you to keep things cleaning. It cleans the colon. Anyone like to camp? I love to camp. In fact, I used to camp every summer. And what we would do is we were very poor. We didn't have any money. So we'd be getting ready to go camping. And what sort of things do you go camping with? What sort of foods do you bring along? Oh, bad stuff. Like, name the stuff. That's hot dogs. What else? Marshmallows, hamburgers, right? And the hot dogs and hamburgers, you can't eat them by themselves. You got to put something around them, right? So what do you put around them? What kind of bread? White bread, and what else do you bring camping? Like, let's say you have no money. You like are dirt poor. You get a big box of what? They cost like 25 cents a pack. Yes, you get your ramen noodles, which is made of what?
Salt.
And? Yeah, white flour again, right? So you got hot dogs, hamburgers, you've got candy, you've got soda, you've got marshmallows, you've got white bread, right? And it was the funniest thing. I was a young man. I was healthy. I was drinking plenty of water. We were always hiking the trails. But whenever I'd go camping, I wouldn't have a bowel movement for a week. Now, why do you suppose that happened? Because what? Oh, let's think about those foods. How much fiber is hot dog, hamburger, any sort of meat? Zero, right? Soda? Zero. Marshmallows? Probably not much, right? Cheese? Like you melt the cheese on the hamburger. How much fiber is in that? Nothing, right? How about buttering the bread? Any fiber in butter?
No.
And what about white bread? Is there a lot of fiber in white bread? It's very, very low, right? So it's low fiber or no fiber. That's all I was eating. And so nothing moved for about a week. Even though I was young and even though I was healthy and active and drinking enough, fiber is very, very important. Not just for cancer risk, but for other things as well. We talked about losing weight for fiber because how many calories per gram does fiber have? Anyone know? Zero. It's the no-calorie wonder. Just like what beverage? Water. Zero calories, right? It's wonderful for you. The other nice thing about fiber, as we talked about this before, a lot of people think that diabetics should not eat fresh fruit. Have you ever heard that? Yes. Is that true? It's not true. Definitely not true. And here is the more detailed explanation of it. If you consider for a moment an apple, right? This is thyme, and this is glucose and insulin levels in the blood. When you eat the apple, your blood sugar is going to do what? It's going to rise, and then insulin acts on the sugar, and then your glucose will fall, right? Yeah. However, if I give you the same amount of calories as in the apple, but in the form of apple sauce, what do you think is going to happen? And it will what? It will rise. It actually rise a little bit faster, and then it will fall a little bit faster. What do you suppose happens if I give you the exact same number of calories, 100 calories, in the form of apple juice? What do you think is going to happen? It will have more of a spike, right? And then it will come back down to normal. So what's the difference between applesauce, and apple juice? The fiber and the rate of absorption. That is correct. So the fiber actually normalizes the rate of absorption. And the more you process a food, the less favorable the glycemic index is going to be, if that makes sense. The glycemic index is a rating of how quickly it will spike the sugars, right? So when a diabetic eats a whole fruit, it's not bad for them. Will it cause their sugar to rise? Sure, it will. But since it has fiber, right, it will be a gradual rise. It will be a gradual rise. So fresh fruit's great for diabetics. Now, candies, like refined sugar, you know, milkshakes, things like that, definitely are not going to be helpful because they're going to cause what? A spike in the insulin. And I'm not here saying that apple juice or applesauce are evil. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying they are more refined. That's all. They have less fiber, right? So they're going to be absorbed much more quickly. Another interesting thing we find is that as you eat more fiber, your risk of colon cancer does what? What do you think? It drops, of course. In fact, they did a study that showed a linear relationship of decrease. And they said that if the average North American would add 12 grams of fiber, which is really just a large bran muffin, you would eliminate 40% just from that of all colon cancer deaths. Almost half the power of fiber. When I was at Stanford University, there was a young woman in her 20s. She was one of our pediatric interns, and they rotate through the emergency department. Everyone in all branches of medicine, except for psychiatrists, radiologists, and pathologists, I think, have to rotate sometime through the emergency department. And she was no exception. They have to do two sessions, one in the summer and then one later in the fall. She had done a great job. She was obviously really good with the kids. And so when fall came around, I said, well, where's our intern? I need to have an intern come on because I was the senior resident on. And they said, oh, you didn't hear? She got cancer and died in 6 months. It was breast cancer. And we were all devastated. We decided to band together and create a foundation in her name. We raised $50,000 in her memory for the Susan G. Komen Breast Cancer Foundation. But I want to do more than research. I want to prevent the breast cancers. I want to keep women from not only the death, but also you think about the attack on your identity, right? When a woman gets breast cancer, it attacks not only her health, but who she is as a woman, right? Can you imagine what a double mastectomy does to someone in their 20s or 30s? Right? It doesn't really make them feel great, does it? So breast cancer is not just one that causes death, but it attacks the very core of our being. I'm not going to talk about all breast cancers, but have you ever heard of something sensitive and something insensitive? You ever heard that when they talk about breast cancers? Anyone know what the something is? I'll give you a hint. It's a hormone. Estrogen sensitive or estrogen insensitive, right? And so a lot of people have started looking at the influence of estrogen on breast cancer risk. And of course, you've heard of, you know, should you take contraception? Should you not take contraception? Should you take estrogen replacement after menopause? Should you not take estrogen, right? You've heard that whole debate. I'm not going to talk about that debate per se, but we'll just suffice it to say that estrogen can be an influencing factor in breast cancer risk. A lot of people have talked about hormones in the food. Have you ever heard about that? One of my friends, his uncle actually owns Clover Stornetta milk. I don't know if you guys get that here, but it's got the big laughing cow. Got a big smile on it. And he was sued by Berkeley. He was sued by Lucerne. He was sued by all the large milk companies because he was the first one to put on his milk no RGHB, right? No reverse bovine growth hormone. So they sued him for that. And he's like, whoa, but it's true. I don't put it in my milk. And they're like, well, but it makes us look bad. But he's like, you do. So he actually won the lawsuit. But it came out to the public at that time. Many people weren't aware until that lawsuit that they were actually using growth hormone in the production of milk. So a lot of people worried about that. I'm not actually going to talk about that. I'm going to talk about actually a more powerful producer of estrogen, because not all estrogen is evil. Did you know that? If a woman has a child, at least one child, it will actually drop her risk of breast, uterine, and ovarian cancer immediately. Did you know that? Kind of gives new credence to the Bible verse that says you will be saved in childbearing. I never read it that way until I started studying medicine and realized that you actually have a risk benefit from having a child. And that is due to, what do you think? Yeah, it's, well, not necessarily estrogen, but it's a hormonal change. It's a beneficial change. It can be progesterone. There's oxytocin. There's all kinds of hormones associated with pregnancy. However, estrogen, progesterone, all those hormones, they're in a balance, right? And when you change the balance, you start to create risk. Anyone ever noticed that there are certain women who, when they start to do, like, have you ever heard of ultra marathoners? Right? They don't just do a marathon, they do like 50 miles, 100 miles, 100K, right? They do all these races. And those women, when they start to train, what do they all lose? Yes, exactly. He pointed out, he's like, they lose their breasts. That's true, they do. They lose their menstrual cycle, right? And it's actually due to what you said. Why do you suppose that women, they lose their menses, right? It's the same reason. Have you ever seen these supermodels, right? As soon as they start getting really high up in modeling, what goes away? They lose their period. Do you know why these women all lose their periods? Yes, it is. We actually talked about over here. Remember the 12% we talked about? When you drop your body fat below 12% as a woman, do you know what will happen? You will lose your period. But do you know why it happens? That's the interesting thing. It's because estrogen is not effective just by itself. It has to be peripherally converted. And that's what you can look up. For those of you who are health professionals, look up peripheral conversion of estrogen. It has to undergo conversion into its active form. And do you know what converts it to its active form? The fat cells. Yeah, that's right. So if you don't have enough fat, you don't create enough active estrogen to create a period. And that's harmful, period. Right? That tells you something's wrong. So I can tell you that when you have low body fat, you have a lack of estrogen. But what do you think happens when you have too much? Could it be possible that the lack is harmful, but that also that the overproduction or estrogen dominance is also harmful? Could that be true? You know what? It's absolutely true. And here I'll show you how true it is. If you look at risk of breast cancer, and this is one times the risk, this is twice the risk, this is three times the risk, etc. 4, 5, 6, la 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 la. And if you look at women who are normal weight, right? Normal weight women have just normal breast cancer risk. If you are overweight, that means more than normal ideal body weight, but less than 20%, then your risk goes up to 2 times. So that's 2 times. If you are obese, which is greater than 20% ideal body fat, it's 3 times. So that's actually supposed to be a line, but anyway. It's a linear relationship. So it goes 1, 2, 3. But that's premenopausal women. When you look at postmenopausal women and the same study, the same risk, the postmenopausal woman is the solid line. And if she's normal weight, it's still the same risk. Isn't that great? If you're overweight, you immediately go to 5 times the risk. If you're obese, you go to 12 times the risk of breast cancer for postmenopausal women. Do you remember what the risk increase for smoking was versus non-smokers? That was only 7 times. This is what? 12 times, folks. This is serious stuff. Serious stuff. Getting control of the fat is not just important for diabetes. You know what's funny with a lot of the presentations I give? You may have lots of different diseases, but do you notice that I say the same things, right, as far as the treatments? Does it not seem very similar? A lot of the treatments are the same thing: plant-based diet, exercise, fiber, right, phytochemicals, antioxidants, right? They're all the same. They're all like the same. Because really, the diseases are different, but the treatments are the same. They really are. There's a design that we were created for. And it's very simple to get back to that design. It's not complicated things. It's not technology. It's not drugs and things like that. Drugs don't cure disease, right? I mean, drugs are helpful because they change the location of the problem. You need that sometimes. But certainly, it's not the long-term cure. I think that the easiest way to help someone lose weight is what we talked about before. Because you can tell someone you need to lose weight. But you know what? Most people already know that, right? I had a guy one time. He came into the ER, and he had abdominal pain. I was worried about appendicitis. And so I went to order a CT scan, but I couldn't get the CT scan because he was 350 kilos. He was almost 1,000 pounds. He was like 800 something. And there was a weight limit on the scanner. So I ended up having to call the UC Davis Zoo. And I said, what's the weight limit on your CT scanner? They're like 13 tons. Why do you suppose it's so high? They got to put the elephants in there, right? So I was going to arrange transfer to the UC Davis Zoo for this man. Do you think he needs you to tell him that he's fat? Listen, I'm calling the zoo for this guy. He knows already. He doesn't need you to tell him that. Do you know what he needs? He needs someone to get up in the morning and walk with him, right? He needs someone to have a cooking school and teach him, right? He needs someone to encourage him to find a better way. You know, there was a gentleman who came to the New Start program that I trained at, and this New Start program was to teach people the principles we're talking about: nutrition, exercise, water, sunshine, temperance, air, rest, and trust in God. All those are the eight natural remedies. And he was actually a food service director at a religious hospital, actually a Seventh-day Adventist hospital, and he was morbidly obese. And let me tell you, he got no end of teasing, bless you. People would say, oh, hey, you work for the hospital. What do you do? Well, he was the food service director. So what kind of cracks do you think he would get all the time? Doing a little too much quality control there, Russell. Right? And it hurt him. It hurt him deeply. And finally he said, listen, I've got diabetes. I've got high cholesterol. I've got high blood pressure. I'm going to take care of this. So he came to the New Start program. He lost 20 pounds. In just a short, it was less than a month that he was there. And then I decided to do my internship with him at his hospital. And he's like, well, why don't you stay at my house? I'm like, sure. And people still teased him about being overweight. But what they didn't realize was that at 5 a.m. every morning, Russ and I got out and walked 5 miles together. They didn't see that. You know, yes, somebody may have problems in their life. There may be a lot of things going on, but you don't know what's going on the inside. And they may be trying their best, right? Sometimes instead of pointing the finger, give them a helping hand, right? Isn't that the better way? For sure. I want to go beyond cancer now. Go beyond the risk factors and the diet and the lifestyle, and I want to just ask you, what is cancer? Someone give me a definition. Cells without a blueprint. I like that. So cells kind of multiplying, right? But not just multiplying, they're multiplying out of control, right? Because when you cut yourself, what do you want your cells to do? Regenerate. You want them to multiply. But when they get... right? You want them to multiply and close this gap. When they get to another healthy cell, what do you want them to do? Yes, stop. Leave it alone, right? End the multiplication. But cells that are cancer, they're not only out of control, but when they come to another healthy cell, you know what they do? They push it out of the way. They crush it. They actually steal its blood supply. So they're out of control and without respect to surrounding tissues or organs. Yeah, I like that. They forget who they are. Interesting. Consider this for a moment. And when you have tumors, they actually secrete something called angiogenesis factor. What do you think that does? Angiogenesis, what does angio mean? Anyone know Latin, right? Heart or circulation, right? What it does is it creates new blood vessels. That's what it means, angiogenesis. It creates new blood vessels to the tumor and steals the blood supply of the surrounding tissues. The other thing that cancer tumors can do is when they grow, like especially... if you have like a lung tumor, here's the trachea, two main stem bronchi. This is your heart. Your heart's not really heart-shaped. It's a little bit different. This is the
vena cava. When you have some of the lung cancers, when they start to grow in the chest and get bigger, they can actually press on the vena cava. Did you know that? And the vena cava is what brings the blood supply back to the heart. And you get something called superior vena cava syndrome, because when they totally block off the superior vena cava, what do you think happens? You have a heart attack and you die, right? If you cut off the blood return to the heart, you die. But what happens to the tumor if you die? Have you thought about that? What happens to the tumor? It dies. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? That although cancer is desperately trying to feed itself, right? It's stealing blood supply from other tissues. It's growing without respect. Eventually, at the end, it will also kill itself as it kills its host. I want you to think about that for a minute. And now I want you to understand the immune system. The immune system, at its most elemental level, is the white blood cell. The white blood cell is a single-celled organism. We'll just draw it. Let's say that's what it looks like, right? Although it is a single-celled organism, it is very unique as a system. When it detects threats, dangers, virus, bacteria, right? Protozoa, worms, all kinds of nasty stuff, right? Most single-celled organisms, when they detect a threat or a danger, do you know what most single-celled organisms do? They run away. No. When they detect a danger, they run away because they want to self-preserve. Does that make sense? But it's very interesting. The white blood cell, it actually doesn't eat them. Did you know that? It encompasses them. That's correct. So it will change its cell wall to engulf these bacteria. And it doesn't eat them. It has little vacuoles, little compartments, and they will attach to the cell wall of whatever that organism is, and they contain things called lysozyme or peroxidase or superoxide dismutase. You don't need to know what that means necessarily, but they're very powerful oxidizing agents. They're poisons. And when they unite with that bacteria, they release their contents, their deadly contents, inside the cell, and it destroys that bacteria. But did you know what it does to the white blood cell at the same time? It hurts. The white blood cell, as it's releasing those poisons to defeat the enemy, actually harms itself in the process. A white blood cell has the capacity to destroy approximately 12 average bacteria before its cytoplasm or its circulation will become so toxic that itself will die. So perhaps when it gets to about 9, maybe 10, maybe 11, maybe it retreats back to the spleen or bone marrow. What do you think? It does not do that. Did you know that every single white blood cell in your body will fight to the death till it dies? Now, interestingly enough, there are certain organisms that it cannot defeat in that process. They are too strong. They are resistant organisms. One of them is tuberculosis. Tuberculosis is a very difficult organism for the immune system to clear. And the immune system actually senses that. And after a while, when it senses that it cannot defeat the tuberculosis,
it will begin to change its approach, and it will line up end to end with other white blood cells, and it will slowly begin to surround the organism. And as it has completed its circle and created a little cavity between you and the enemy, the white blood cells will sacrifice their lives. They will die, and they will keratinize, and they will become fibroblasts. They will become a living or dead now wall of cells between you and the enemy. Are you starting to see something? Are you starting to see cancer versus the immune system? Do you see two opposing philosophies battling for supremacy in your body? You have the philosophy of cancer, which is looking out for number one. The philosophy of cancer is the philosophy that rules most of the world right now. But I promise you, that philosophy, just like cancer, will kill you in the end. Even when you achieve your goals, you've got it all. Even if you win the rat race, you're still a rat. That's a problem. But when you think about the immune system, it does not flee from danger. In fact, it will fight at the expense of itself on behalf of the body until it dies. But though it dies, it will be reborn in the bone marrow again to fight the good fight. Are you seeing something? Are you seeing what I saw when I began studying immunology? I see something that is unique in all of nature. Most of nature is ruled by survival for itself, right? But there is a message in the immune system. And it is a message that goes beyond lifestyle. It goes beyond changing habits. And it goes to changing the philosophy that rules you and I. Will you live your life like cancer? Will you live your life by treating other people as either a ladder or a stepping stone for yourself to climb higher? Will you actuate your life by selfish motives? Or will you choose the way of the immune system that lays down its life for the body, that self-sacrifices, that self-destructs to save someone else, that will actually move itself between the danger and the body, even if it's at the expense of its own life? You know, there is a verse in the Bible that everyone knows, right? What's the favorite verse? John 3:16. Do you know how it goes? It goes, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life." You know, the commentary for that verse, you know where it's found? It's in 1 John 3:16. Amazingly enough, it says, "Hereby we know the love of God, because he did what? He laid down his life for us." When you see the immune system laying down its life, something that is totally abnormal for a eukaryotic cell, totally out of the norm of the natural world, you see something different that's going on in your own body every day. A war between two philosophies, two competing ways of life. John 15:13 says that greater love hath no man than to lay down his life for his friends. But something about God is even deeper than that. Romans 5:5-8 says that God laid down his life for us while we were yet enemies. That's a profound, profound statement. And I think that that is the statement given by the immune system. I appeal to you tonight. Make a decision. To be healthy, yes, it's important. To improve your life, that's important. But what is your motive? Will it be for self or will it be for others? Will you be the cancer or will you be the body triumphant in the immune system? Thank you.
You have been listening to a special presentation sponsored by the Bay Roberts Seventh-day Adventist Church. It is our desire, as we share the good news of Jesus Christ with our community, to foster an environment that promotes a holistic approach to living, with appropriate attention to health of body, health of mind, and health of spirit for all. We seek to accomplish this service to our community by providing health, family, and personal spiritual enrichment programs. This congregation of Christian believers meets each Saturday morning for Bible study as well as for praise and worship. If you would like to know more about the Bay Roberts Seventh-day Adventist Church or to find out what other community events are ongoing or upcoming, please visit us on the web at www.bayrobertssda.org. Or if you'd prefer, feel free to write Bay Roberts Seventh-day Adventist Church, P.O. Box 930. Bay Roberts, Newfoundland, A0A1G0. Or reach us by telephone at 709-786-7516. May God richly bless you and yours.